Senate Committee on Information Management and Technology, Thursday, March 1st, 2001, 1 p.m., Hearing Room 357.
The Technology Committee to order, and I think I told you folks we have some, we do have some conflicts with two committees running at the same time and with an overlap of committee members, so we're going to find people with us and sneaking out and coming back, and it isn't that they're bored at that particular moment or don't want to hear from you or anything, it's just the complication that does exist around this building sometimes. Good afternoon.
Sorry about that, Chair.
Yes. Speaking of complications around the building.
Yeah, there it is.
I am, where is my agenda? At this point, we're going to have an informational meeting, and it will be dealing with an overview of implementation of Senate Bill 622 from the 99th session. And we have invited testimony for this, and I will allow some time for others who might want to comment afterwards. I'm going to try, I'm watching my time a little bit. I've wanted to hold this to about an hour because we do have a public hearing work session on some other bills afterwards. So if you, I want you to be sure to get your message across, but be brief and quick if you possibly can, so we can kind of get to everyone and make the 1 hour deadline if we possibly can. At that,
Senator Farrell.
Yes.
Senator Farrell only just walked in. Would he be okay? He expressed some interest in this because he's getting some calls from his constituents.
I did ask the good senator if he wanted to. He certainly feel free to sit up here. And if anytime he wants to be involved, he participates as a member of the committee. We'd love to have you, Senator. Thank you. I need everyone I can get. In fact, I may call on some of you in the audience to come help me and serve on the committee this afternoon if I get short. Sherry Chang and Patrick McLarney and Lee Chadley. Do you want to come up as a team?
Good afternoon, members of the committee. I'm Sherry Shun, Deputy Director of Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. With me are Patrick McLarney, who is the telecommunications manager, and Link Shadley, who is our telecommunications coordinator, responsible for central and eastern portion of the state.
I want to ask a question I could, Sherry. Can you folks hear in the back at all? I'm getting mixed signals. Would you speak up just a little bit then?
Yes,
these
sir.
Are not amplifier mics, really. They're more recording mics. So sometimes you get you feel a little self-confident, think that you're broadcasting, and you're really just going over there. So speak up if you would. Thank you, Sherry.
I'll do my best.
Okay.
Our job this afternoon is to walk you through the charge given to our department in implementing a portion of Senate Bill 622 and give you an update on where we are with the implementation. Given the instruction of the chair, I think we can handle this piece in less than 15 minutes,
okay,
if that means with your approval. We do have a brief packet of information in front of you which will help with laying the foundation for what we are about to talk about. So I would beg your indulgence in kind of walking through this package with me so we can move through this fairly quickly. Let me start by saying that the focus of Senate Bill 622, as it relates to our agency, are four items. The first one is it requires carriers electing price regulation, and this is a voluntary election if the carrier chooses to do so, to fund telecommunications infrastructure and technology. And the bill does prioritize those investments and specifically say the state wants to fund connectivity to broadband for our communities, route diversity, which means having more than one way in and out for a community or having a backup system in telecommunications, and expediting advanced services going to communities in Oregon. It does form the Connecting Oregon Communities Advisory Board, which is a five-member citizen, volunteer citizen board appointed by the Commission, Economic and Community Development Commission, with consultation with the governor. And these members have the primary responsibility for looking at proposed projects for use of money toward telecom infrastructure and technology investment. And they make the recommendation to the commission. The commission has the final say in what's funded and what amount. Finally, there are four eligible carriers in the state, and they are, they were US West, now Quest, GTE, now Verizon, Sprint, and Century Telephone. Let me go on to the next page. Everybody wants to know and be reminded exactly how much money was available for infrastructure and technology investment. The next page, page 3, shows a total of $120.4 million, which was calculated based on U.S. West's gross interstate revenue in 1998, when the company opted in at the end of 1999. The legislation had required 20% of the previous year's gross interstate revenue of the electing carrier. So that's how we ended up with 120.4 total. The legislation was also very specific in the allocation between two uses. One is education. The other is broader community-based infrastructure improvements. And it shows in columns, first of all, the year, from year 2000 on, the total amount of dollars in millions deposited into the aggregate of improvements. And as you can see, it's $36 million the first 2 years and $24 million the second set of years. And then it shows the dollar amount that goes toward economic development for the broader infrastructure improvement. That's the first column, 10.8, 10.8, 24.1, et cetera. And the second column, 575, 325, et cetera, are dollar amounts set aside in the legislation for our agents to administer this program. Then it shows a transfer to the state. The last column is dollar amounts dedicated for K through 12 technology enhancement. And later on, you will hear Tom Cook talk about how they use that 25.3 times 2, the $50.6 million. And my job is to talk to you about the $68.2 million, which is the responsibility of our department. If there are no questions, I'm ready to go on and
any
talk.
Any questions at this point? Okay.
Now, if we go on to page 4, telecommunications infrastructure account is the title for the non-school, non-K through 12 money. It includes $68.2 million for infrastructure, and this is outside of the administration money. And the administration money did include funding for a statewide needs assessment, which became the basis for proposed projects from regions of the state. We wanted to show you that, there is another account, the Connecting Oregon Communities Fund, which received $50.6 million, and $50 million went to K through 12. The $0.6 million went to a public access account. There were, I think, 7 or 8 named uses for funds in that account, beginning with higher education system and go down the list, community college and libraries, Oregon Public Broadcasting, et cetera. And because there had not been sufficient funding to go further down the list in the named beneficiary, the 0.6 was only sufficient to meet a portion of the first named use, which is the Oregon higher education system. And again, the technology account is K through 12, and I know Tom Cook will provide a lot more information. So if I may, I'd like to go on to page 5, which says, we see our job is to facilitate the deployment of telecommunications infrastructure to achieve two things. One, build economic opportunities, and two, build quality communities across Oregon. Page 6 lists the activities we have been engaging in the last year. We have been helping communities and business groups to assess their telecommunications service needs, and this was done largely as part of the statewide needs assessment, which was funded as part of the administration cost of the program. We have been helping...
Mary, yes. A quick question. Someplace back in here, will you elaborate on that? Is there something that were you elaborating on that particular point?
The needs...
I guess I was going to ask you, give me an example, for example, of that first one. Helping community and business groups assess their telecommunication service needs. What specifically have you been doing in that area?
I should have Link, who has been working in the trenches, to offer an example of working with communities and business groups.
I'm just trying to get a picture of the state.
Yes.
And see what you're...
There were two parts to that, and both were done statewide. The first part was getting partners who had some technical assistance funding from the department to organize community groups in every county. Some of them did two or three counties at a time, but they held meetings within the county with some of the telecommunications, I call them advocates or evangelists, also community leaders, local elected officials, and develop a prioritized list of their needs. Then they brought that up to an upper level for a regional needs. Those are submitted to us, and those are part of the plans. That's what we measure the projects against that are submitted to us for approval. And the second part of that was a household telephone survey that was done statewide that gave us a good insight into number of computers, how many people use them, how many have dial-up, how many have access to broadband, where are their problems, where are their local voice problems. So we have that data to use, and a number of the communities have used that as they develop their own plan, saying here's where the red flag is.
Okay, that gives me some idea of what you're doing. Okay, thank you.
Okay. And in addition, we have been identifying and coordinating resources in order to help prioritize and meet community needs. This Link has already talked about it in his example, but basically we try to figure out who ought to come to the table to help figure out what are the needs, what's available, and how to fill the gap. And that, and we take it upon ourselves to make sure the right people show up. We also have been reviewing proposals for use of the telecommunications infrastructure account money. I mentioned the $68.2 million available, and it's our responsibility to kind of direct the use. So part of the staff's responsibility is to review these proposals, but at the same time, we have been helping local communities with development of proposals, just to make sure that they have the proper resources and tools to provide us with needed information. We have been helping communities, partners, and staff to address telecommunications issues. Most recently, the example may be the Harney County chair has been concerned about multiple T1 lines in his county courthouse employed by state services, and was curious about if there are any redundancy, if there are opportunities for the county to piggyback onto excess bandwidth of someone else's connection, and Link has been heavily involved in kind of helping to figure things out and answer that question.
Yes, Senator Atkinson.
Excuse me. T1 lines in Burns?
Yes, there are numerous T1 lines in Harney County Courthouse, and Burns actually has a... has a stop of a on the major fiber optic line, which is part of the state system because of the archives building and because of the extensive backup system.
Senator Timms.
Senator Timms has left his mark on this state.
Okay, that just stuck out. I won't get on my soapbox. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Thank you.
And finally, we have been...
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I had resolved to sit silently here and listen, however I feel
I must... I didn't expect that to happen.
I must defend my colleague, Senator Timms, who simply would say to you today, if he were here, that that Burns is the most earthquake-proof place in Oregon. And that's why the archives and the T111 lines are located there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
There's some talk of moving the Capitol over there.
Finally, we have been maintaining a clearinghouse of information for telecommunications-related economic development programs as we continue to engage in helping to assess needs, identify options and solutions. We begin to accumulate information and have been actively using the agency's website, the telecom section, to post that information and encourage sharing of this sort of information. Page 7 shows the milestones that we think you may be interested in understanding the progression of our program implementation. As you can see, from September 1999, when Senate Bill 622 was signed into law, we have been kept fairly busy. Quest opted in December of 1999, and then in the following 12 months, the staff did the work needed in order for decisions to be made on proposed projects, and that included engaging in the statewide needs assessment, as Linka had described, getting to the needs assessment product, which was shared with the Joint Legislative Information Management and Technology Committee, I believe, three times in the last calendar year, and finally leading to a round of proposals submitted to us end of August 2000, and the Connecting Oregon Communities Advisory Board acted on those proposals in September of 2000. The commission acted on them in October of 2000. Remember, we have two decision bodies and a two-step process. And the second round of proposals were submitted end of 2000 in December, and the advisory board and the commission met in February. Just this past month to take actions on.
Sure, a question. You're getting proposals and you have so much money. What's the match so far? Are you able to fund most of the proposals, or are you finding proposals far exceed the availability of funds?
Well, remember, we start out with $68.2 million. So the first round of proposals, when the projects were approved, they were approved based on rough cost estimates. And once the projects were approved, Quest engineers have sharpened their pencil to come up with better, more reliable cost estimates. And the most recent cost estimate we have for the first round of projects, which were approved in October, is $49 million. So we start out with 68.2. We take out the 49. We have about $19 million left in the pot if we fund all round one projects. Then we have a second round of projects on the docket, and they total up to $24 million.
And you have 19.
Well, we have 19, so we don't have enough to fund everything.
It gives me some idea of the way the requests are coming. Senator Nelson, you were ready to ask something.
I'm just saying, Chair, the comments we've been getting indicate there's been some problems at the and this funding or these priority levels, that the first round was accepted and then evidently second round was approved and then everything was sort of thrown out and then brought back in. And I think the committee might like to know what that process is. Are we, what has the commission decided or the board has decided, or where are we in this whole process?
Senator Nelson, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, I'd be happy to speak briefly to where we are in the process. And I think it's interesting that Senator Nelson refers to the quandary we're in now and all the additional work charged to the staff and advisory board as a problem. We every day think of the origin of the problem.
I mean, the thing is, we're getting phone calls from people and saying, what's going on out here? The board has led us one direction, or the commission has led us one direction.
Right.
Now all of a sudden, we're going another direction. The whole project is there's been a loss of confidence by and large. And that's one of the reasons why Senator Farioli is here, because I know he's getting telephone calls too. And so we have some concern about, you know, where 622 is going. We have a lot of investment in this, and we want to make sure that the commission is going in the right direction and the department's going in the right direction. So that's where I'm coming.
The decision the commission has made is...
Wait, when you say the commission, let's be sure, let's use the right... You're talking about the
Economic and Community.
I'm sorry, what?
Economic and Community Development Commission.
Okay, not the Economic.
Not the Connecting Oregon Communities Advisory Board.
Okay.
Very quickly, we have two bodies involved in looking at projects. The advisory board's job is to look at the more in-depth technical aspects of proposals and sort of do the hard work. And the commission does the second round of check and look at the decisions and the recommendations of the advisory board in light of broader policy context, because they have been involved in economic and community development for years and years. So that's basically the sequence. The advisory board and the commission both had approved one round of projects in October. That round of projects will add up to $49 million based on our most recent cost estimate. The advisory board met in early February and acted on a second round of projects, which totaled $24 million. They took their action without benefit of the updated cost estimate of the first round of projects. So when the commission met later, after the advisory board had acted on the second round of projects, the commission's direction is, since we don't have enough money to fund everything, we need to make sure we spend money on what's important. And the commission's leaning, they did not take formal action because they wanted to charge the advisory board and the staff to engage in active conversations with parties of interest and take the time to work through if there are win-win solutions rather than, you know, $5 million worth of projects will not be funded based on our current administrative rules. So they basically said, in order not to hold off on implementation of important things that we all agree absolutely have to be done, let's go ahead with funding for five rings. And these are five connected rings in the state which will provide the route diversity that everyone says is needed for business recruitment, for homes and everybody else not to go down when a fiber cuts a fiber. And those five rings add up to $44 million, well within the monies we have. And if the concern is, are we going to negate the commitment to those projects that have been funded in round one, if you take the $44 million for the rings, out of the $68 million total in the pot, there's $24 left. Those projects in round one, on top of the rings, total up $13 million. So just by doing the simple math, we know those $13 million could all be funded out of the 24 after we build these five rings. The commission's action, I think it's a little confusing because they want to do the right thing by, one, giving the advisory board the opportunity to work with local partners and kind of come up with something that is a consulted recommendation. Secondly, they don't want to hold every decision at bay until everything is all worked out. So they said, go ahead and do the five rings. We know we have money. We know we can continue with a commitment with round one. But at the same time, we want you, the advisory board and the staff, to work hard with local partners and figure out if there is a smarter way to use the rest of the money, but only if everyone agrees.
You know, I'm watching the time, and I want to be sure that we get a chance for everyone to present today. And I'm sure in some of those presentations we're going to hear some of those concerns from open. So I will try to allow time and maybe have to get some of you back up here again to respond to some more questions. So why don't I let you move forward and finish yours, and then we'll move to the next, and try, because I know we have a lot of questions. Is that all right, Sir Nelson? Okay.
Well, page 9 actually speaks to a portion of what we've just been talking about. What good is this money going to do if we fund these projects? Page 9 lists the first round of seven projects that were approved in October 2000. They're going to build self-healing rings across the state, which will provide route diversity to most part of eastern, central, northwest, and southern Oregon. And they are going to bring broadband access to 40 communities, and they will speed the availability of digital subscriber lines. And I should say that Senator Atkinson was saying to me some concerns that he's heard from local cable service providers on if 622 implementation is kind of unfairly interfering with the cable deployment of, because as you know, cable modem is also a form of broadband access that can go to the homes and offices directly, similar to digital subscriber line. And I would say the short answer is the advisory board is very aware of that concern. We've had active conversations with Mike Dewey, and through him with his membership, our solution is proposals are posted on our website as soon as we get them so that Mike can make that available to his members for review and comments. And the advisory board, if there is evidence of broadband deployment in certain communities intended in the near future, then they are committed not to funding digital subscriber line because it is unnecessary. Page 10 shows five blobs or rings, and those shaded blob areas basically show the ring configuration, which allows for the route diversity and outlined in a very quick way where those self-healing rings are in the state. And you will see, by looking at that map, there are a few areas left out in central sort of mid-Columbia area. It is primarily Sprint service territory in southwest coast. The south coast is Verizon territory. In the central coast, where there is a gap there, that's primarily Sprint service territory. And I should say that this is not to point out that other people are other service providers are not playing game playing with us at the same table. In fact, some of them have been very collaborating very well in making sure that their investment dovetail with these investments and we leverage the most out of it. And you have Bill Wyman sitting in the back who's with Century Telephone, and he has been a wonderful player in this process. A final point on page 11 are the things that we're doing in addition to getting contracts out for approved projects, working through the money questions that Senator Nelson had just raised. We see ourselves very much as continuing to serve as the convener, facilitator, and resource, not only for future projects, that if there's any money left in this account, but also for future problems and solutions in various communities, because we have built some knowledge and some resources, and we think that should continue to be put to use to benefit communities and businesses. And that concludes our presentation.
Do either of you have anything you'd like to comment on?
Make one very brief comment.
Identify yourself.
Yes.
So
Link Shadley, Oregon Economic and Community Development. One of the powerful things that SB 622 has done is jump-started the community enthusiasm. There were some community planning groups in the state, and there were some areas where they were not. And as this project became a reality, we kind of enthused those people, gave them some resources to work with, and now they're continuing on and helping themselves. And I think that's probably the most powerful and lasting legacy of this whole project. Really good to see that happen.
Mr. Yes. I just have one question. Senator Harper wanted me to ask you where the Lakeview project was in all this process. He has some concerns about that.
Senator Nelson and Mr. Chair, the Lakeview project is part of the Southern Ring, and the ring is what the commission had approved at their February 22nd meeting. And so it is part of the contract, as I understand, to proceed as Pat to...
Actually, that portion, sir, this is Pat McLarney for the Economic Development Department. That portion of the project is not an essential piece of the ring. It would be a connection into the ring. And as our interpretation of what the commission said was in their February 22nd meeting was, do the ring. So the ring gets done, but the lawyers tell us that connections into that ring are not the ring.
Where is that in the process and that connect, just so I can indicate to Senator Harper where it,
Senator Nelson and Mr. Chair, I think what we ought to do, given that there are a number of projects where people are getting confused and the staff had not made the rounds to go out into communities and have face-to-face conversation with folks, we will offer to schedule individual briefings very quickly with the legislators who may have an interest because of the, you know, how their district may be involved. And I think rather than taking up the committee's time, we'll just take that on the
Senator
response.
Senator Perioli.
Actually, these two bodies, one that helps administer the...
in various communities because we have built some knowledge and some resources, and we think that should continue to be put to use to benefit communities and businesses. And that concludes our presentation.
Do either of you have anything you'd like to comment on?
Take one very brief comment.
Identify yourself.
Yes.
So
Link Shadley, Oregon Economic and Community Development. One of the powerful things that SB 622 has done is jump-started the community enthusiasm. There were some community planning groups in the state, and there were some areas where there were not. And as this project became a reality, we kind of enthused those people, gave them some resources to work with, and now they're continuing on and helping themselves. And I think that's probably the most powerful and lasting legacy of this whole project. Really good to see that happen.
I just have one question. Senator Harper wanted me to ask you where the Lakeview project was in all this process. He has some concerns about that.
Senator Nelson and Mr. Chair, the Lakeview project is part of the Southern Ring, and the ring is what the commission had approved at their February 22nd meeting. And so it is part of the contract, as I understand, to proceed as Pat to...
Actually, that portion, sir, this is Pat McLarney for the Economic Development Department. That portion of the project is not an essential piece of the ring. It would be a connection into the ring. And as our interpretation of what the commission said was in their February 22nd meeting was, do the ring. So the ring gets done, but the lawyers tell us that connections into that ring are not the ring.
Where is that in the process and that connect? Just so I can indicate to Senator Harper where.
Senator Nelson and Mr. Chair, I think what we ought to do, given that there are a number of projects where people are getting confused and the staff have not made the rounds to go out into communities and have face-to-face conversation with folks, we were offered to schedule individual briefings very quickly with the legislators who may have an interest because of the, you know, how their district may be involved. And I think rather than taking up the committee's time, we'll just take that on the
Senator
response.
Senator Perioli.
Actually, these two bodies. One that helps to administer the occurs to me is that reference. Magical rings, people want to see them, but in point of fact, they feel like people are being beat back and forth between two different entities that don't communicate very well. And I think, you know, you talked about the two bodies. Folks in my district are wanting me to find out where they want them dumped. You know, so the bottom line is that there has been a lack of communication. I don't know that even if we explained very well to people that this ring process is reprioritized in front of some local services, whether they would accept that as being reasonable when so many expectations and so much of the economic development plans and of the future of these communities is at stake. So I guess, you know, I understand what you're trying to explain here, and what may make sense here in Salem is not something I can sell out in rural communities. You know, wait your turn, that you've been reprioritized, this makes more sense. The rings are the priority because they offer the self-healing connectivity that will make the system more efficient eventually. We've got experts are telling us we need to reprioritize. That won't get you a half-full cup of coffee in rural Oregon. So I'm very concerned that what's really at stake here is the credibility of the product of 1149.
622.
Excuse me, 622. Thank you.
You're on.
Went to energy deregulation.
Right. Let's try to keep them separate in this particular meeting.
I'm, you know, somewhere in an alternate universe, they're on a collision course. I know it. You know. thank you.
Okay, thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, yes. I can say something.
Yes.
There has been no reprioritization.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Has been no reprioritization by the commission. The commission is the official body with the decisions. They act on the recommendations of the advisory board. They have chosen in their most recent decision not to act on the advisory board's recommendation because they feel a lot more conversations need to take place between the local partners and the advisory board and the staff in order to seek win-win solutions. I don't believe anyone intend to go back on their words. However, what everyone is doing to go through the extra rounds is to find solutions that will allow more communities to get more out of the limited resources. And if I may just say one thing, I know the intent is to have all of these worked out at the next commission meeting, which is April. Mm-hmm. So people are working very, very hard, moving toward a quick resolution, you know, driving around the state, talking with folks they need to talk to, and that will continue to occur over the next month or so. So we're not just sort of sitting on things, dragging our feet, and not ignoring the conversations we need to have. But I do understand what you've shared with us, and I think one unfortunate thing is information came at us fairly late, given the commission meeting. And there have been a lot of work done on the part of the advisory board, even though they were all public meetings, but there had not been enough time for their thinking through among themselves to be translated, interpreted, and fully consulted with the partners.
Well, I guess from what I'm hearing in different discussions, I guess there's a real concern about 622 being in jeopardy. Is that what I'm hearing?
Mr. Chairman, yes. I think that everyone who has a stake in the outcomes has received voluminous communication via fax, mail, and phone calls from constituents who are being activated by their community organizations, including chambers of commerce and business assistance leagues and so forth throughout the state. And there's a very real sense that projects that are reprioritized may, in fact, be reprioritized to oblivion, taken off the table, or somehow getting lost in the second and third rounds. And I'm hearing very clearly that there are funds available to do the project and no lack of commitment. I'm hearing that in this room. I am not hearing that back from constituents who are getting the reassurances that they need immediately to stop the flow of information out of my fax machine, which I really would appreciate. And I don't know if the Senator Nelson, I suspect, has had the same tidal wave of pointed communication from
that. That is correct. So at this point, we're assured that there will be no reprioritization. Is that right?
I cannot speak on behalf of the advisory board nor the commission. And I think at the Commission's April meeting is when the final decision will be made. However, I heard very clearly from the Commission they feel strongly not to reprioritize, but that is, frankly, it depends on who your constituents are and whether they have a proposal in the first or the second round. I think the advisory board and the commission both are trying to do the best thing, which is to figure out how to buy the most, given the intent of the legislation, out of the money available, and also do the right thing by our administrative rule processes and by what the legislation requires us to do, which is why they have committed to taking some extra time to talk to everybody. One example, Dan Stark, who's sitting in the audience, told me this morning that a proposal they made in the first round, which was approved for appointed presidents in LeGrand, actually is done. It's an approved project. It had a price tag of $500,000, but around the time that the project was being approved, Verizon and Quest had gone ahead and made the investment. So that's a saving. And here is just one example of reasons why we need to go back and do another round of checking on, is this still needed, and how much money are we talking about? We have better cost estimates from the engineers from Quest, but we need to confer with the community groups in order to get that done. And I know Pat was in Central Oregon yesterday meeting with folks, and I give you my word in the advisory board and the staff are committed to getting the word out face-to-face, listening to folks concerned, and get accurate information out.
Okay.
And at this point, I think the best we can do is come back with an update.
Okay, well, if you would keep us apprised, we'd appreciate it. I guess what the big concern, you say, April, we've got the opportunity for about 4 to 6 weeks of the rumor mill even compounding and getting worse, so I guess that really stresses the importance of you getting out and getting some...
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
If you wouldn't mind, we are planning...
Could you identify yourself?
Oh, yes, Pat McLarney with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. We are having the next board meeting in Bend on Thursday, April the 8th, next week at 9:30 in the morning till around 11:30.
April the 8th or March 8th?
Excuse me, March 8th, next Thursday. The exact location we don't know yet because we haven't been able to haul that down. The purpose of that meeting with the board members is for them to get a chance to see exactly what was said by the commission on February 22nd and then to set up a series of meetings around the state with the communities and the people who have put their applications in so that we can talk with them, hear from them, work with them to find a variety of solutions that we can take back and recommend to the commission, which they've asked us to do, so that then the commission on April 19th can say the process has taken place, we've heard, we've got new numbers, we've got recommendations, we've got volunteerism, we've got updated numbers.
Now, is that word widely circulated about the March meeting?
Oh, it will be, sir. We have an email.
It will be. You say it has not been.
No,
yet.
Sir, because we don't have the location down, so we didn't want to tell 800 plus people where to go because we don't know where to go.
I hope that you'd get that word out rapidly. It would save some fax machines. Yes, and I'm going to try to move on so I get the others on.
Just one quick comment. Some of the input that I'm getting is the fact that we've been on this process for 2 years or 2.5 years, however long it's been, and when are we going to get to the point where something's going to get done? We keep pushing things back, and the education part of it is basically up and running, and their problem is the other way, is they've got all these processes going in, and they just need more help to get everything all hooked up, and so there's... The education part's up here, and the economic development part is down here. And our communities are saying, "We want some action."
Okay, I'm going to stand by, and we may have you back up if I can. Okay, at this point, Jenny Lang, would you please come forward? And while she's coming, I do want to just bring to the attention of the committee that Pamela Johansson is our new committee clerk, and we appreciate her joining us. Andrew has started working with. Continuing with Health and Human Services. We had just borrowed him. And we also want to acknowledge the work of Anita Mullins, who really does a lot of the behind-the-scenes work for us and doesn't always get the appreciation. We want to acknowledge her work. Okay? Ginny, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jenny Lang. I represent Quest. I was going to spend just a little time on the regulatory portion of Senate Bill 622, and then I would be happy to answer any questions that you have about any of the other parts of the bill as well. And I'll do this quickly. The regulatory components of Senate Bill 622 did a number of things. One, it eliminated rate of return regulation for the electing telephone company. It put in place price caps for non-basic services, and basic services, primarily dial tone, prices continue to be set by the Public Utility Commission. U.S. West, now Quest, elected to come under Senate Bill 622 on December 30th of 1999, so we have just about 1 year's worth of experience. And we've been very happy with the relationship that we're developing on the new rules of the game with both the commissioners and with the staff. It's been a very good process for us. Another element of the regulatory action was that service quality levels were set in place for an electing company, which included predetermined fines that could be applied to companies if they failed to perform. We're in the situation now where we have the 1 year's worth of experience. We have failed in a couple of the categories. The commission is talking about the potential for using the fines to improve quality of service in areas where we have been deficient. So that process is underway, and the discussion is going on with the commission. And the final large portion of the regulatory element was the prohibited acts section, which really applies to our business-to-business relationships with competitors, and it established a sort of a fast-track process if there were complaints. As far as the impact on the company of the regulatory elements, probably the primary one for us is that it eliminated rate cases in the future. Now, we are still in the process of completing the last rate case that we had underway with the commission, and we're in the rate design phase of that. And so hopefully within the next 6 to 12 months, we will complete that and have then the rates in place that are actually subject to the price caps part of Senate Bill 622. It reduced our workload in some respects because we don't file nearly as many tariffs that have to go through the exacting processes with the commission that we used to. We still file with the commission our price lists and make sure that they know what we're offering, but we don't go through the protracted procedures that we used to. And there are some reductions in the financial reporting requirements that we have on certain kinds of transactions and depreciation schedules and so on. So from our standpoint, the regulatory process has been a very pleasant one, actually. We've been very pleased with the progress that we've made with the commission and the staff. The other elements of the bill have also been an exciting adventure. Working with the Department of Education and certainly Tom Cook in the open group on the K-12 portion has been really a very exciting and worthwhile piece of work. It was a huge project, and the fact that spending $50 million was very clearly delineated in the legislation and had very tight time frames on it was made for a challenge for both the department and for the company, as well as other companies around the state, because much of that money was spent throughout the state, irrespective of the territorial lines of the company. So that has gone very well. And we have, I think, made real progress with many of the community partners that we've worked with on the rural infrastructure part. We have some of the same frustrations that you and the community people and certainly the department has about the time frame that we would like to be out there, you know, turning shovels in the dirt and getting work done. But I have every expectation that within the next few weeks or certainly months that that's going to happen, and we'll start seeing the results soon.
Thank you, Jenny. Any questions for Jenny?
Just going to ask on that on the contracts, is there any particular thing that's holding up those contracts and that we, that this committee could help with?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, if you weren't a lawyer, I'd probably tell you that it was the lawyers. But
so those damn lawyers? I know what you do with those.
I think we're real close. I think we just need to get closure on two or three more things and get some signatures on lines, and we'll be in business.
We'll keep Senator Nelson out of it, and it should be expedited rapidly.
I think it'll be well.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Jenny.
Thank you.
Tom Cook.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Senator Cariello.
Ms. Lang, the crossed or imperfect communications on this issue is generating negative publicity. What's the effect of that on this project, on implementation of 620?
I'm sorry, Senator, would you repeat your question?
The mixed or crossed or imperfect communication to communities on the exact status of implementation of Senate Bill 622 is creating negative publicity. And that's evidenced by the faxes and phone calls. And it tells me two things. It tells me of the value of the program. It's valued very highly by rural communities. But it's generating negative publicity. The fact that there's uncertainty, and now possibly people are suspicious of the outcomes. Is that negative publicity affecting the program or the policy, or are you hearing that negative publicity in your offices?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Farioli, we're certainly getting the same kinds of communications, probably not in the same ways that you are, but as my team is out on the stump and talking with community leaders and others, they're certainly hearing the frustration that, you know, we've been at this for over a year, and why hasn't something happened? We've gone through all the processes you told us that we needed to do, and now we'd like to see some results. So certainly it's been a difficult circumstance, and we need to get our ducks in line and get the contract signed and start talking with the community people immediately about what we're going to do and when we're going to do it and how it's going to happen. And I think only some solid results in communities is going to satisfy people that we're back on track.
Sounds like, based on what Senator Farioli has said, people want to see action and not words right now.
Mr. Chairman, I think the intention is good. The legislation's effective. The process is now an impediment to the implementation. And that causes people in every community to be angry and suspicious that state agencies prevent the progress that they're assigned to promote. And that's the negative publicity that I keep hearing. I'm not sure it's earned. I'm sure that there are circumstances that make
perception and reality get
caught. It won't matter. You know, when folks hold that meeting on March 8th, I think it's possible the smell of hot tar may be the most prevalent thing in the room. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Okay. Tom Cook.
Thank you. My name is Tom Cook.
I'm yourself,
the director of the Oregon Public Education Network. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, with me is David Wright from the Department of Education. And I'm going to ask David to first report on implementation processes and results, and then I will follow up with some comments of my own. We originally thought that this would take about an hour and a half to tell you all of our success stories, but we'll try to keep it down to 15 minutes.
I'm sure you will.
My name is David Wright, Director of Technology, Department of Education. As you know, Senate Bill 622 directs the department to implement the bill. When the bill passed, Superintendent Stan Bunn asked Tom Cook to chair the committee to put it in place. The department joined with Tom at that point in a very successful relationship, and it's always a pleasure to report on a success to the committee. We hired, the department hired a quality assurance contractor to help us guide us on our way. We developed a web application, take applications over the internet for all of our schools and districts so that we could implement the bill. To report on specific sections of the bill then, and I'll be following the handout that was provided to you, that is called an update on Senate Bill 622 implementation. This is the more
David,
of the cut and dried.
I assume you're going to just highlight this because we'll have this.
Yes.
So we can read.
Yes, just
give us a quick summary.
I'll highlight the cut and dried part here, and then Tom can get to the more dramatic and thrilling aspects of the implementation. Section 1.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I hate to have to miss the dramatic and thrilling aspects of Tom Cowan's presentation, but I'm called to another committee. But I appreciate your courtesy and allowing
me to
sit.
I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you, sir.
Go right ahead.
Section 1 provided funds to put LAN in every school facility in the state of Oregon. That has been accomplished, serving an additional 91 schools. Section 2 was funding that went to Tom Cook to operate the Open Project, and you'll have to ask him what he did with that. Section 3 helped reimburse the cost of putting a T1 line speed into a T1 speed line into every eligible school facility in Oregon, either upgrading what they had or continuing to reimburse what was already there.
What's an eligible school district?
An eligible school. It was one that has to meet the definition of a school established by the department. So it's public schools,
okay,
for the
so
most part,
school,
as you would.
Yeah.
So several 56K lines were upgraded to T1, and I'm happy to report at this point in time that all schools have received that line, with some minor exceptions and some small difficulties that Tom will discuss. Sections 4, 5, and 6 are the implementation of the Distance Education Network. Section 4 is the one that actually pays for the purchase of the hardware, the VTEL units that are going into all the high schools. 5 and 6 are funding mechanisms to pay for the connection from the high school to the LAN, or rather to the backbone, to DAS, to provide the video services. Section 7 is the ADMW portion of Senate Bill 622. The first year, calendar year 2000, $11.9 million was budgeted. $11.9 million has been dispersed. On the next page, there are a couple of highlights I'd like to highlight, and then I'll turn it over to Tom. To date, just to give you a status of where we are on the implementation, 85 video conferences nodes are installed. 245 schools and ESDs have initiated an application with us, so that means that there are approximately only 40 that have not yet applied, and we will go out and get around to them. We're implementing about 15 to 20 a month, and that's why we're not too worried about the last 40. We have plenty to do between now and the end of the year. With that, I will turn it over to Tom Cook to talk about some of the other experiences we've
had. Thank you, David.
Implementing the bill.
Thank you, David. And again, for the record, Tom Cook, Director of Oregon Public Education Network. David referred to the one segment that was allocated to OPEN as a part of the bill, and those funds were to assist K-12 in the state in in funding internet access. In the K-12 network, we have an estimated 120,000 workstations or computers across the state, and the bandwidth requirements to support this is growing immensely. We're adding 3 to 6 megabits of capacity per month to support the type of applications that are beginning to be used in the classrooms, and this money was allocated to continue to pay for that. We're estimating that in our next fiscal year, the internet access bill will be somewhere in the excess of $800,000 for K-12 alone, and it will continue to grow.
So those funds that were allocated here were to take care of that. In my remarks, the handout that I have provided to you, we have, in fact, accomplished a tremendous amount in the last 14 months. And as I'm looking back now, I'm thinking that it was probably in our own best interest that we didn't have money allocated to do a lot of studying and implementation. We just went forward and did it. And we've run into some challenges because of that, but it may have been in our own best interest. And I've listed these as challenges and accomplishments. First of all, one of the challenges is that not all of the areas of Oregon have yet been connected. We still do have some delays. We still do have some areas that have extended relief dates on those. But I must say that with the working partnership that we have with the carriers in the state, that they are doing everything possible to make this happen. And we're working with the community, working those schools, with the carriers to improve that. With over 600 new orders of T1s, well, it's one of the accomplishments in this time frame. Many of the providers were able to cost justify or accelerate their upgrades in some of those regions that might have ended up being on the other side of 622.
The LAN, rather to the backbone to DAS to provide the video services. Section 7 is the ADMW portion of Senate Bill 622. The first year, calendar year 2000, $11.9 million was budgeted. $11.9 million has been dispersed. On the next page, there are a couple of highlights I'd like to highlight, and then I'll turn it over to Tom. To date, just to give you a status of where we are on the implementation, 85 video conferences nodes are installed. 245 schools and ESDs have initiated an application with us, so that means that there are approximately only 40 that have not yet applied, and we will go out and get around to them. We're implementing about 15 to 20 a month, and that's why we're not too worried about the last 40. We have plenty to do between now and the end of the year. With that, I will turn it over to Tom Cook to talk about some of the other experiences we've had.
Thank you, David.
Implementing the bill.
Thank you, David. And again, for the record, Tom Cook, Director of Oregon Public Education Network. David referred to the one segment that was allocated to OPEN as a part of the bill, and those funds were to assist K-12 in the state in in funding Internet access. In the K-12 network, we have an estimated 120,000 workstations or computers across the state, and the bandwidth requirements to support this is growing immensely. We're adding 3 to 6 megabits of capacity per month to support the type of applications that are beginning to be used in the classrooms, and this money was allocated to continue to pay for that. We're estimating that in our next fiscal year, the Internet access bill will be somewhere in the excess of $800,000 for K-12 alone, and it will continue to grow. So those funds that were allocated here were to take care of that. In my remarks, the handout that I've provided to you, we have, in fact, accomplished a tremendous amount in the last 14 months. And as I'm looking back now, I'm thinking that it was probably in our own best interest that we didn't have money allocated to do a lot of studying and implementation. We just went forward and did it. And we've run into some challenges because of that, but it may have been in our own best interest. And I've listed these as challenges and accomplishments. First of all, one of the challenges is that not all of the areas of Oregon have yet been connected. We still do have some delays. We still do have some areas that have extended relief dates on those. But I must say that with the working partnership that we have with the carriers in the state, that they are doing everything possible to make this happen. And we're working with the community, working those schools, with the carriers to improve that. With over 600 new orders of T1s, well, it's one of the accomplishments in this time frame.
Many of the providers were able to cost justify or accelerate their upgrades in some of those regions that might have ended up being on the other side of 622 as a part of the community process that Sherry was referring to earlier. So we have seen a tremendous amount of input from the K-12 component to assist the community development in these areas. Another challenge has been from our school districts that even though we indicated to them in the very beginning that 622 funding was a two-year allocation, there are still now concerns about the fact that we have all of this out there, that in January of 2002 they in fact will be faced with budgeting for all of those services. The accomplishment on this in that we've had this growth is that, again, 91 additional schools are now connected that we didn't have before, and we've seen some equity in that, in making that happen. So they have the bandwidth, they have the connectivity, they have the same level of access to resources, educational resources, as anyone in the state. Again, I've already mentioned the bandwidth growth, and we're not sitting idle watching this grow without taking every opportunity to maximize the use of our resource and minimize the cost. And we're doing that through several things. One, setting up with our partners such as the higher education, state of Oregon, hierarchical caching, which reduces bandwidth use, more application toward the state intranet, keeping as much of our traffic within the state with our partners rather than going outside, and developing additional strategies on minimizing other impacts. Another challenge has been, and the one you're probably hearing about the most, is the concern about the ongoing cost of video conferencing capability. 622 required that we connect each of those points in the high schools and the ESDs into a state backbone, state network. And there were very valid reasons for doing this. One, we across the state now have settled on a standard platform so that we have compatibility between state agencies and K-12, higher education, et cetera. And we're looking forward to being able to use the existing state backbone in some of those cases. Not all of that has come to fruition, however, as far as the growth of the statewide network and us being able to begin to utilize that. So we do have, in fact, a situation where the fee that is charged to each site for the connectivity is such that school districts are not sure they're going to be able to afford that. So in preparation for that, we're doing several things. One, there's a review of the existing fee structure between the Department of Education and the Department of Administrative Services to see if there's any possible relief there. Two, we're working with the state on trying to maximize the application of E-rate for all components of the video network and try to get additional resources in from the federal E-rate program, which would reduce those monthly costs. Thirdly, we're looking at network efficiency designs, looking at regional network hosts or aggregation sites, and looking to see with the engineering staffs if, in fact, that will reduce the overall cost by having fewer individual circuits running all the way back to Salem. So we're working on those kinds of things to try to get that cost down to what the schools would consider to be a more affordable rate. Are we going to be able to accomplish that with what I just listed? Probably not. Are we going to be coming to you for some additional support? Probably so. We're not prepared with the actual numbers on that yet, but we will soon be ready to do that. Another challenge that we have encountered with the video conferencing distance education is that we have found limited content, curriculum, teacher training, and support. And these are areas that we had not envisioned as being red flags or barriers originally. As a result of that, we have created a K-20 coordination group, and they are across the three sectors of education, K-20, now starting to address all of those kinds of issues that we're faced with.
higher education community colleges have a lot of content that could be appropriate for our K-12 system. We want to make sure that we have a process and a mechanism for getting that there. We're creating some of the content within our own system, within the schools, but there are a lot of other issues that we're facing. One is a governance structure, another is sustainability. Higher education, for example, in preparing their offerings of courses, need to be able to advertise those for not just for 1 year, year to year, but they've got students have to know that they're going to be there over a longer course of time. We're not yet positioned with this K-12 network, with EdNet going away, which has been a great part of their delivery system, to be able to give them that comfort zone that it's all there and in place. Again, another challenge, uncertainty about how to make the best use of this. The Department of Education formed a Distance Education Council. We're working on the policies, the procedures, and looking at how SIM-CAM can be delivered over this network and into the classroom. I've already mentioned the fact that EdNet goes away at the end of this fiscal year, and that the higher education community needs a replacement system. The accomplishment out of all this, of course, is that we have been forced to really work collaboratively together in looking for those other kinds of solutions. The second page that you have is more of just a list of some of the successes that we've...
Tom, I'm just wondering, and I hate to do it, but I'm going to have to sort of move on. But the Senate Bill 622 success stories somehow or other do need to be into the record someplace along the line, so we can be sure to get that in, because I think that it's remarkable what you have accomplished, and we do want to get that on the record someplace. Is there any one thing you'd like to say before I...
Two things.
Tom's always done this.
I know you only gave me... I need two.
Okay, Tom.
First of all, the very first point on here, we've put together a network where people were really unsure of how they were going to use it. In this short period of time, we've had over 1,500 video conference sessions scheduled. Those are classroom to classroom. They are professional development and training opportunities. They are meetings. The legislature itself is using this network now. And you can go down through some of these. And in fact, Mr. Chairman, one of the points in here, we even have one school district that now has decided on a common bell schedule.
That's now your second point, right?
That's not. The last one is that the last point I'll make about, and it relates to video conferencing, is that Oregon absolutely needs to have a distance education strategy. We in K-20 are working very aggressively at trying to develop such a vision and a strategy. It is very important to all three of the sectors, and as I mentioned, for the state, there is no governance structure about how this will work. There is no strategy on sustainability and how they will collaborate and cooperate together. Or how it might be staffed. The scheduling coordination is probably the most critical element of that whole network and environment. And I could go on.
Okay, Tom, I think your point's well taken.
But I wanted to make that point. Yeah. That distance education in this state is really
probably
critical.
Should get that on the record, and maybe for a point, some of the point in time to discuss it and to see where we fit in with the education committee and our committee. But you can make a note of that and see if we work something on it. And by the way, I do note that, if you recall, Senator Courtney's been concerned about hearing from young people and their thinking on technology, because they think differently than my generation does. It's kind of like Senator Atkinson and I certainly are on different wavelengths. But the idea is to bring...
not sure how to take that.
But to hear from young people, and I think we've been working with Tom, and I think maybe that we're going to do the teleconferencing. We may involve students from all over the state in dealing with the issue he talked about. Okay, Tom, thank you very much. Okay. Appreciate that. I'm going to call Phil Nygaard from PUC. I'm running over a little bit here, but and Dan, I would like to, Dan Stuck, I do want to give you just a minute, if I can, to go ahead.
All right.
Chair Duncan, members of the committee, I am Phil Nygaard, the administrator of the Telecommunications Division at the PUC, substituting for Commissioner Smith, who's ill today. I sense quickly that the Universal Service Fund is not really where the action is this afternoon, so I'm going to attempt to give you the one-minute overview. Senate Bill 622 did require the Commission to establish a state Universal Service Fund. A Universal Service Fund is designed to see to it that all citizens have access to basic telecommunications service, or telephone service is a better way to put it, at affordable rates. It's been a term that's been used in federal law for over 60 years. We were to achieve that goal by September 1st of last year. We have achieved it. You probably have noticed that there's a surcharge on your bill starting about last September. That's the way it's being funded. There's a surcharge being applied to all retail telecommunications services. It's an obligation of the carriers, but they do have the option of passing it on to their customers, which is what they're doing. We expect over the 2001 to 2003 biennium that we will pay out close to $243 million in funds. Initially, all these funds will be going to support the high-cost areas of Quest and Verizon. The reason for that is because we're waiting for the Federal Communications Commission to complete its work involving the smaller carriers. Once that's done, we have 6 months under the law to complete our work so that all carriers serving high-cost areas will receive funds. That's my 1 minute over. If you have questions, I believe you have copies of the testimony. If you have questions, I'd be happy to answer those. Otherwise, I'm finished.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate that, Phil. Dan, I know you had a comment you wanted to make. Would you? It says if I have time, but I'm going to squeak.
I'll be very brief.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dan Stark, I'm the director of the Regional Services Institute at Eastern Oregon University. And I'm also principal staff for the Eastern Oregon Telecommunications Consortium. Consortium is a nonprofit organization with membership spread over 11 counties. It's government, education, health, nonprofits, private sector, ISPs, telecommunications companies. And the objective of EOTC is to make sure that telecommunications is built out in Eastern Oregon to benefit all the residents of the region. I just want to quickly say that I've been in this process for about 4.5 years, ever since I came to Eastern and started to tutor under Terry Edelson. And I've been to all the meetings in the last few months, and I'm still confused over what's going on with the 622 process. And I think of myself as a relatively intelligent person. At the last meeting, we heard that the five rings are now going to be give priority. That's the intent of the bill. We have no problem with that, except that we do not have a guarantee that the seven projects approved in the first round are going to be honored. And the process was set up under the rules developed by the department. People put together applications. We worked in the field with a number of the communities. It took meetings. It took a lot of time. Put those applications together, submit them under the rules, have them scored under the rules, and then brought to the board and then to the commission and be approved. And approval does include getting the final contracts done and costs done. So, in essence, what's happened here is the department and the connecting board have gotten out ahead of themselves. They got into round two before they had finished pricing out and completing round one. And on top of that, they made the assumption that they had to do something to fix the process because they can't fund all the projects in round two. Our position is that there's only so much money. Finish round one, price it out, come back, take a look at your priorities in round two, go down the list, and when you run out of money, you run out of money. And there's only so much to hand out. We are very concerned that we're going to get back into rulemaking, shuffling around, and that projects are going to fall through the cracks. And as Senator Farioli has said, people are nervous out there. So we see the process is working towards getting what we need, the rings built out, the electronics installed so that local communities can be connected. We are concerned about how it's getting there, and it's creating a lot of concern.
Do you plan to attend the meeting on March 8th?
I will be at the meeting on March 8th.
Okay. I don't want to speak for the committee. I guess I would like to hear a report, or I would like to hear from from Sherry and the people from the Economic Development after that meeting, too. But I'd like to hear from you to see if, when you walked away from that meeting, did you have some answers to your question? I realize that the official meeting and action wouldn't be until April sometime, and there could be some lapse time. But I guess that meeting, as I understand, is to listen and to be an informative meeting. Is that correct? Yes. That's the purpose of that meeting?
Mr. Chairman, Pat McLarney, Oregon Economic Community Development Department. The purpose of the meeting on the 8th is for the board to figure out how they are going to go and meet face-to-face in all the appropriate communities so that folks like Dan and his constituents can be there and talk about all the issues that they see and make suggestions and guidance and all the other things that go into that so that we can do what the commission ordered us to do, which is get back to the communities and take a look at the situation we have and come up with a solution that meets everybody's needs. So the purpose of the 8th is for the board to say, okay, these are the things we've got to do. Now we're going to go out in such and such community Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whatever they say, and notify everybody. And that's right, where the real work gets done, sir.
But as I understand also, this Dan and people like Dan will have a lot of input into that meeting.
Exactly, because part of what's going to happen, sir, is we're going to be examining what exactly did the commission tell everybody at that time to make sure we all know what they said so that when we start doing what we believe they told us to do, that is, in fact, what everybody understands is the right thing to do.
Okay, we
want to make sure nobody misses out on what it is we're up to.
Committee, correct me if I'm misinterpreting something, but my interpretation right now of the concerns that we're hearing and this committee is hearing, we want to be assured that there are going to be some answers and that people are... there's concern about the credibility of 622 right now. We want to, by the April meeting, no later than April meeting, we hope that those things have been resolved. Now, I recognize you always can't make everyone happy, and that's not, but at least there should be some assurance that people know the direction and have had a chance for input. Other committee members want to say anything? You've worked on, Senator Metzger, you've worked on this committee a lot, too. Any comments?
I think you're right on. I think there's your points are good in terms of where the direction of people wanting to go. You're not going to, not everybody's going to be happy.
No, you can't.
We need to have a general sense of confidence in the system and the process and that into what those things are. And to the extent that there obviously are some issues, I think it would be good while we're in session to make sure that process, that confidence in the process is there.
We will want someone back to this committee after that April meeting. Senator Atkinson, any comment?
No, I am here for a quorum and I'm just taking care of my conflict.
Okay.
You're doing very well.
You're doing well right now.
Okay. I would like to point out again, though, that we've gone through a process and 7 projects were approved through the Economic Development Commission.
I think, Dan, you've been very clear.
And public releases were made on that. And people are building grant proposals and other projects based on those approvals. And if we're going to go backtrack and start to reshuffle our opinions on those projects, we're getting into a nice gray area, and it's going to cause a lot more concern than just what happened in the last month.
I have a feeling that group will hear that on March 8th from you, yes, too.
Thank you. I'd like to make one thing real quick.
Yes.
In the letter that was circulated, and I would appreciate if the chairman would put this into the record, Senator Atkinson's name, spell check, made it Senator Alexander, and I know Jason Alexander is a very competent
actor. He's just here for the forum anyhow, so
let me say that he's no Senator Atkinson.
It doesn't make any difference.
And I wish to apologize for that. Thank you. I will be back.
All right. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. I think this has been it's been a good hearing for us. We recognize a lot of good things have happened. Sounds like a lot of miscommunication. Sounds like people need to get their act together. And we've been assured that by the time we meet with you folks later in April, it will be resolved. Okay? I'm going to close the informational meeting on Senate Bill 622, and I want to thank all the participants in that particular part of it. Now I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 11. Do we have any? Senate Bill 11. David, right, you are back up. And Tom, why don't you come together, okay?
Jason Alexander.
I can't do those together, Kevin.
No, that hurts. No.
Good afternoon. I was trying to hurry you along so I'd have time for you.
We appreciate that.
We appreciate that. Senator Duncan, members of the committee, my name is David Reich, Director of Technology, Department of Education. With me today is Tom Cook, Director of Open Project. Senate Bill 11 is a technical adjustment to Senate Bill 622. What we're trying to do is overcome a couple of oversights that were done when the bill originally passed. Quite simply, there's a conflict between the fiscal year and the school year and the calendar year. When you put those three together, it creates some problems in the actual administration of the bill. We're not here to talk about any additional funding or any funding problems that we're having. What we are trying to do is account for, first of all, we're asking for some limitation because the last half of the bill for calendar year 2001 is actually in the next biennium, and there was no limitation put in the budget for us to spend funds in the next biennium, and clearly we will have expenditures since we are making payments for the $5,400 a month for video equipment and video line costs in an ongoing sense. So we need to have the capability to make those payments in the first 6 months of the next biennium. Then also, because of the calendar year, again, there were only enough money for a certain number of months of connectivity on the video side. So we did not start buying the video VTEL equipment and then installing it right at the get-go because there weren't enough money in the bill to pay for a number of months to install everybody right at the beginning, even with a ramp-up. So we delayed that installation, starting that until June. But what that meant was the bill allocated the funds exactly equally. 50% for 2000, 50% for 2001, when actually we were spending one-fourth of the money in 2000 and three-fourths of the money in 2001. So we were just asking for that technical adjustment to allow us to pay out the same amount of money just at a different calendar rate.
Okay.
The third thing, then, which the bill asked to do is allow the department to grant waivers for small school districts that would prefer to have a 56K connection instead of a T1 connection, as the bill requires in all cases. The reason for this is we have some school districts out there that have 5, 6 kids, 10 kids, 50 kids, and having a T1 line is more than they'll need, particularly after Senate Bill 622 runs out. They will not be able to afford it without 622 funds. So what they want to do is to have the flexibility to order a smaller line now, and then when they realize they will have to pay for it or find some means of paying for it after the beginning of the next year, 2002.
Are most of these in Harney County?
Yes, that's correct. Thank you. The department will scrutinize every one of those waivers very closely because the department has taken 622 and made it part of our overall planning process, and we will use the infrastructure put up by 622 for distance education, for electronic assessments, and for all of our electronic communications with districts. So we will scrutinize very closely the granting of those waivers.
Thank you, David.
Tom? Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Tom Cook, Director of the Oregon Public Education Network, and just for the record, I am here in support of Senate Bill 11 and the adjustments that have been requested.
Questions for or David? Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 11. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 11.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 11 to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Metzger moves that Senate Bill 11 be sent to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Metzger.
Just one point, as I was saying to Senator Nelson, I have to admonish the witnesses. We were very disappointed at the assertion that we made any mistakes in Senate Bill 622 last session. But you know, we're not going to take that personal, and we will correct whatever flaws that they thought, you know, were inherent in that system.
Well, it was sent to a wrong committee last time, and they probably did make mistakes, but this committee will correct it. Any other discussion? Any objection? Senate Bill 11 will be sent to the referred to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Closing the open session on Senate Bill 11, opening a work session or public hearing on Senate Bill 479. Do I have testimony?
I'm sorry.
Okay. Can some of you come together? Terry, Dan, Kathy, are you all? You're going to drop out? Okay. He's had his day in court, he's figuring. Okay.
Right. We're tag teaming this, Senator.
Terry and Kathy, would you like to identify yourselves, please?
Chairman Duncan, committee members, my name is Terry Edelson. I'm a retired faculty member from Eastern Oregon University who was part of the group that brought 622 to the floor, and we know of mistakes in 622, but we're probably part of the problem. The Senate Bill 479, in effect, is brought to you to extend the work began with Senate Bill 622. It deals with the middle mile and last mile connections, and it encourages investment by the smaller companies, we hope. We've targeted companies like CenturyTel and the smaller telephone companies with this bill, trying to bring them to the table to make investments through tax incentives. And we hope it will be successful. You heard about the big rings being put out in the regions of the rural regions of the state. And we believe that will happen. We believe that the problems will be resolved and people go forward quickly.
All right, David, okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill.
Chairman Duncan, committee members, my name is Terry Edelson. I'm a retired faculty member from Eastern Oregon University who was part of the group that brought 622 to the floor, and we know of mistakes in 622, but we're probably part of the problem. The Senate Bill 479, in effect, is brought to you to extend the work began with Senate Bill 622. It deals with the middle mile and last mile connections, and it encourages investment by the smaller companies, we hope. We've targeted companies like CenturyTel and the smaller telephone companies with this bill, trying to bring them to the table to make investments through tax incentives. And we hope it will be successful. You heard about the big rings being put out in the regions of the rural regions of the state. And we believe that will happen. We believe the problems will be resolved and people go forward quickly. But we also understand that capital investment is risky in the rural areas and hard to serve populations. And what we're trying to do is encourage investment sooner. CenturyTel, the other companies are working very hard and cooperated in the 622 process, trying to couple their investments to the investments that 622 has caused Quest to make. But we don't believe it's enough, and we don't believe it's fast enough. And so we're asking you to consider a significant public policy actually spending decision, because when effectively you pass a tax credit, you pass a spending bill. In this case, it's to develop rural telecommunications infrastructure and for services into the underserved urban areas. We can't give you a cost projection for this bill for one reason. Nobody knows the impact of information dollars and how to calculate their return, information technology dollars, and how to calculate the returns. I have talked with the Department of Revenue, and we believe that 15 companies maximum would probably take advantage of this opportunity to participate in the tax credit bill, because there are costs associated with participating. You have to file an application with the Department of Economic Development. It has to be approved, and you have to make certain service meet certain service requirements. So, from that perspective, we think there's a small number of companies. We don't believe every company in the state would choose to participate, but we've left it open in the bill. We believe there are essentially two public policy discussions that you need to have above and beyond should we do it at all. One is, should there be a cap on the amount, on the annual amount of tax credits allowed? The amendment number one, which we would suggest not be included in the bill, puts a $10 million cap. And if we want to encourage investment, then let's not put a cap on it. But if, because of revenue projections, you feel it's necessary, then we would encourage you to do it. It's the decision that we believe you need to make, and we leave that on the table. The other issue of how could you limit the exposure of the state in the tax credit area is by limiting the number of companies that could participate by the size of the company, focusing it on the smaller companies. We would encourage this not to happen as well, simply because Quest, Verizon, the larger companies, have a lot of service areas in rural communities where this may cause them to make investments again. So we see those two as particular decisions that need to be made on Senate Bill 479, in addition to whether we should do it at all. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Why don't we go to you right now, Kathy Britton. If you have any comments to add to what he said.
I would like to add my support to this bill. I worked very closely with a lot of, for the record, my name is Kathy Britton. I direct RodeoNet. I worked with a lot of the communities to develop telecommunications plans, and sitting at the table with the providers who were at the table with the communities, I watched a lot of struggling go on about how they were going to solve those middle mile and last mile problems. And communities are energized to find those solutions. I think the small companies are energized to find those solutions, but there simply is too much investment risk for us to push companies to get involved without some incentive. I just want to illustrate real quickly what this might mean in terms of an application, and I'm involved in healthcare, and so I'm going to use that as an application example. We look at small rural communities as having three legs that they stand on. They stand on their healthcare, they stand on their education, and they stand on their economic development. I think rapidly telecommunications is being infused into all of those. I know it's being heavily infused into healthcare. And one of the things that we're dealing with is the fact that Congress has passed security and privacy guidelines that are going to govern all of our information about the patients that we serve. If we do not have the appropriate connections and the appropriate bandwidth to do that, many of our small rural clinics and rural hospitals are going to fold. That's simply where it's at. If you lose one of those community legs, you lose the community. And I think that there are probably similar stories for education and for economic development. But I do think that this is a problem that's going to face us very quickly as these guidelines come into place for healthcare. And I would urge your support of this bill. Thank you.
Questions for either Cindy or Terry? Okay, no questions. Just pick up.
Thank you.
Okay. Are any of you together? Let's see, Bill Weinman?
No.
Okay, come on up then. Okay, if you want to be antisocial, that's okay. It's up to you. Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senators. Terry Edelson asked me if I would come and testify for this bill. And I wanted to come and tell you more about CenturyTel, and after that, I don't want to be perceived as a company that's groveling at the public trough. So I would like to tell you a little bit about our company, and that's why I brought these two charts along. As you can see, we serve about 80,000 customers throughout the state. We own almost all of Eastern Oregon, and we're proud of the service that we give. I like to think that we are kind of the Nordstroms of telecommunications. We're very high cost, but we deliver the service to our customers. Our company is the first system company to provide all digital central office switching in the state of Oregon. We're into significant rebuilds in terms of providing fiber communications. All of our offices, the central office out, is all digital communications, some by fiber, some by digital microwave, and others by digital copper. So with that, if you have questions on the first, as far as the smallness of our company, the largest area we serve is Lebanon, Oregon, that little purple spot. And we have about 15,000 customers there. We have two other exchanges that are between the 5 and 10,000 capacity. And after that, we drop off in a hurry to 1,000 lines and under. And we have many lines that are 200 lines and under in some of our exchanges. And our smallest is Starkey with 46 customers. If I could direct you to the second chart, and I'll just keep this short in terms of the support. We do believe in deploying technology to our smaller exchanges. And this chart shows what will be in place in terms of DSL capability to our customer base by the end of June. The west side of the state, Lebanon, Aurora, Scappoose, Glen Eden Beach, and down in the Creswell, Eugene area, have DSL up and running now for our customer base. The east side is currently being constructed. So to the extent that the Oregon legislative body would want to offer tax incentives, certainly it would help us deploy capital faster. I mean, our capital is a scarce resource like anybody else. Generally, we deploy anywhere from $10 to $15 million a year in capital to give better customer service to our customer base. And so that's my five-minute pitch. If you want to talk to me about Senate Bill 622 or anything else, I'd be more than happy to tell you CenturyTel's position on it. Since it was mentioned earlier, I believe, about Lakeview and facility issues there. And with that...
Okay, thank you. Any questions for... Is it Weinman?
Yeah, no. Bill Weinman.
Weinman. Thank you. No, appreciate getting this. Okay. Thank you. Okay, Commissioner. Sydney, where are you? Where are you? Sydney, where are you? And Ben, do you want to come up at the same time? Or Bill. Well, I don't know why I said Ben. I know. David, with you by any chance? Where is he?
David
going to
be here, but apparently he's. Had another thing to,
okay. Great to go to.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Penhollow with the Association of Oregon Counties, and with me today is Lane County Commissioner Cindy Wheeldryer. Commissioner Wheeldryer is the chair of our Communications, Public Outreach, and Education Committee, and is also the chair of our Telecommunications Priority Team, which is working on telecommunications as one of the county's top six priorities for the 2001 session. Commissioner Wheeldryer will be presenting our testimony, and kind of in the consideration of time, we put both issues together in one written statement, but may also want to reserve the opportunity to come back on 8:33 if there are a couple of issues that remain unaddressed that we feel need to be addressed.
Okay.
So with that, Mr. Chair, let me turn this to Commissioner Wheeldryer, and she will present our testimony.
Okay. Cindy, is there a chance you could kind of just brief your testimony a little bit? Why I do have
sure.
to quit it. 3 o'clock, because I have people of other committees, and so.
We're going to combine both our testimony here on these two bills, and that's the reason I'm appearing before you today. Both of these bills are very important to counties, and it's our telecommunication priority, as Bill just mentioned. And Oregon is poised to build on the accomplishments that have already occurred. Most recently with Senate Bill 622, we want to ensure that all Oregonians benefit from the state's investment and that we have additional innovative funding strategies that we need to put in place to see that the middle mile and the last mile of telecommunications infrastructure is built out and that can be accomplished in a timely fashion. Both Senate Bill 479 and Senate Bill 833 provide just such tools for state and local governments to use to ensure that high-speed broadband telecommunications facilities reach every part of our great state. The Association of Oregon Counties is here today asking for a approval of these two bills and to have a due pass recommendation. And as it was distributed to you, we've also attached for you our priority on telecommunications for this session. I accommodated you, Senator Duncan, and I made my remarks brief, and thank you for your support.
Okay. Questions for Cindy or Bill?
So, Mr. Chair, just the difference. One is establishes tax credit, and the other one issues revenue bonds. Is that really basically the difference in the two bills? And it's all part of your strategy for economic development.
They're just tools in a toolbox that communities have available to them if these pass that they don't currently today.
Oh, there is a resolution committee. There is an amendment to it, too. Do you have any comment on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, we have not seen the amendment.
Okay,
so.
It's the one that has the $10 million limitation.
Okay, the cap.
We're in support of the cap. That was our recommendation.
All right. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on 479. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 479. Senator Nelson.
I would move the Dash 1 amendments to 479.
Senator Nelson moves the Dash 1 amendments. Is there any discussion? Hearing none. Any opposition? They're adopted. Okay.
I would move Senate Bill 479 as amended to the with the subject of referral to revenue.
Revenue.
With a due pass recommendation.
Senator Nelson moves 479 as amended to revenue with a due pass recommendation.
Chair?
Yes, Senator Nelson.
I'll be voting no on this, and I think everyone knows the committee is a strong supporter of your rural development and communications, but I'm not voting for any tax credits at this point. As you know, our revenue forecast is down $113 million. This carries at a potential $20 million fiscal for the biennium, which would restore project independence. It would pay for the tuition losses we're having in colleges. So until I think we go further down the line and see whether we might tap some additional revenues, I just want to let you know I'm supportive of this, but we have programs that we've cut that we need to know what is in full view. And if, in fact, some of those revenue sources come back on the table, then I might be able to change and support this on the floor.
I might explain. I'm going to vote for it. It's going to go to revenue, and I think revenue will look at the big picture down there. So I share some of your same concerns. I think any other discussion? I'm going to ask for a roll call vote.
Aye.
Senator
Nelson?
Aye. Senator Nelson?
Aye.
Senator Duncan?
Aye. Having received a majority vote, we'll send it to...
So my vote reflects the fact that I think we should spend all the tobacco settlement money as opposed to having a little trust fund.
Senator Courtney wants it so noted. Okay. Senate Bill 479 will be sent to Revenue with the recommendation of due pass. Okay. Yes, yes. You want to vote on
these three guys? I think you're
yes.
Vote,
no, so. We have one more.
Well, go ahead. Then I got to speak to.
Yes, we have a. We only have a public hearing on the next one. Do you want to open? Senator Courtney would like to reopen the on Senate Bill 11, the work session, for the purpose of allowing him to vote. On this one, Senator Courtney, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Senator Courtney votes aye on Senate Bill 11, closing the work session on Senate Bill 11, opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 833. Do we have people to testify?
Okay.
Looks like it. Carry. And are you folks, I...
As quickly as I can, sir.
Very good. Okay.
First of all, I'm not used to be... Terry Edwilson, Eastern Oregon Telecommunications Consortium, LeGrand, Oregon. We have brought Senate Bill 833 to the table to try and put another funding mechanism in place, revenue bonds, that would allow small communities, small companies, to get together to expand telecommunications services in the rural areas where, in fact, the business case is not easily made. I would use an example that's not directly related, but the city of Klamath Falls has sold revenue bonds to build a cogeneration facility that is now being operated by Pacific Power, or will be, is being built and operated by Pacific Power, but still owned by the city. In this case, we would envision several scenarios. One, a small community cannot get services from its carriers that it feels it needs. It could use the revenue bonds to, in fact, buy out a carrier. It could use the revenue bonds to partner with the carrier to buy equipment and switches and services that the carrier doesn't believe it can make and charge and recover revenues through the use of that equipment. Just as the city of Klamath Falls is getting will get revenues back through the sale of power. As with Senate Bill 622, we're not sure how this will work. We left this very loosely structured so that the Department of Economic and Community Development, during the rulemaking process, could help define, and during this process, by the way, could help define what the parameters would be for using these revenue bonds. They're much more experienced at it than we are. In Section 5, there's one issue that has been raised, and the way we develop these is we put up our ideas, and then we ask people to comment on them, and then we put every other idea that is received into what we ask be drafted. And in this case, Section 5, it's line 16, a public body may own an eligible project. However, a public body may not operate the eligible project. Given the controversy swirling around House Bill 2680, we would suggest that this be struck. That it was not the intent to preclude a public body, in effect, from operating a system, especially when a community cannot get the services it feels it needs and is willing to take the steps to move forward. And so we would ask that in an amendment to this bill that be struck.
Okay. Anything else, Terry?
No.
Okay. Questions? Thank you. I'm going to go to Brant Wolf, even though, Cindy, I know you're over 100 miles, but I want to hear the opposition to this first right here since he's signed up opposed to it. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Chairman Duncan, members of the committee, my name is Brant Wolf. I represent the Oregon Telecommunications Association. The OTA is opposed to Senate Bill 833 as currently written for exactly what Mr. Edwilson just testified to. We thought there was some ambiguity and some vagueness in this bill regarding public bodies and non-public bodies and how they would operate and own these eligible projects. And we'd like to see that cleared up. We have some philosophical concerns in regard to this bill as well, which I won't read from. You have my testimony. You can see what
that is.
Is
there a chance that you folks could get together afterwards and try to work on some of these things and come back to us with some recommendations?
Chairman Duncan, I'm sure that we will. I'll be talking to Terry, yes.
Okay. I'll let you do that then.
Okay. Certainly.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the brevity.
Any questions at all? I'd be happy to answer
any questions.
Any questions
right now? Okay, we're going to let you guys work it out a little bit. Cindy and Bill. I think she left you, huh?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Bill Penhollow with the Association of Oregon Counties. Commissioner Wheeldryer had to step out to take a conference call on a cell phone. So I would like to indicate to the committee that we support 833, as we indicated earlier in the testimony. We also support the amendment that was suggested by Mr. Edelson, and we'll be happy to sit down and see if we can't work these details out.
Good. We'd like to have you work with them.
Yes, it's extremely important that local governments, in particular counties, have the ability to invest in these underserved and unserved areas in our rural communities to make sure that we get the broadband out to all of Oregon. So we're very, very concerned about this, Mr. Chair. And
thank you.
We'll do what we can to get back to you with an amendment that will be acceptable so we can move this bill on.
I want to involve David if he's around someplace, too.
I will.
Okay, thank you. We'll let you folks work it out, and we'll look forward to seeing
Chair,
you back.
Chair, can I just ask
yes, Senator Nelson.
Bill, how do you resolve the public versus private issue that we have in here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, as we have talked before, there are going to be circumstances where counties may need to be providers of last resort to get the services out to some of the most remote communities. And if that's what it takes, we feel that the law should be written to allow that. We don't want to get into the business, but it may be necessary to do so to enable a company to eventually come in and take over the service and provide it for that community.
Mr. Chair, just follow up on, and we were happened to be in Ashland last week and looked at their citywide network. They actually formed a private, a private company that went out on the market. But the city was the owner and the private company was subsidiary. How do you resolve that? I mean, they're basically in the business, but they went out and borrowed the money by themselves and they're paying it back. Is that a compatible thing, or is that in conflict with this whole concept?
Are you familiar with the Ashland situation?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, I am somewhat, but I would prefer to have my colleague from the cities respond to that question, because I'm not familiar enough with the situation really to make an informed comment on that. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions? Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing then on Senate Bill 833. Nothing else to come before the group today. Thank you. My goodness, thanks a lot. We are right on schedule.
We accomplished
a lot this afternoon.
Right.
Meeting is adjourned.
I apologize.